Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
She's not just going to be another vote. She's not just going to be another voice. She's going to be a real leader that will lead this court back to the mainstream, which is what this country needs.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well.
So all of this is a diversion by the people who want to frankly hurt President Obama. You've heard the Republican Senator Jim DeMint say it. Let's make this Obama's Waterloo.
Get the yenta off. Take the yenta off the show. In my day, the most that yenta could have been was a woman who ran a brassiere store in Fresh Meadows. But of course, this is why we have the Senate we have today. In other words, power to the people. So when the people stand up and say, we're not going to be Obamaized anymore, we're not going to take the Obotomy that you want to give us, Barbara Boxer, suddenly that's illegitimate. And then some of you rats on the left have the nerve to say that because somebody brought a Bible, they're Nazis. You ought to, you know what? I think I'm going to stop right here. Play the great pretender, then I'll come back in about 10 seconds when I've collected myself because I am so distracted. All right, I'm ready to go again. It only took 5 seconds. Now, first of all, I have created two new phrases for you today, Obotomy and Obotomized. I would like everyone listening to this show to see who steals it first in the media. My guess it will be the hemorrhoid with ears, in that he has the best ears for stealing things and he's fastest. So it'll either be him or the golfer. They're very good at stealing phrases and taking them for their own. But the fact of the matter is, just because Boxer wants you to have an Obotomy, just because Boxer wants you to become Obotomized, does not mean that you must become Obotomized by this illegitimate government that we have right now. And let me tell you something else. The more the people speak up, the more the war dogs of the left are going to start yapping and biting. The more you show what true democracy is, the more you're going to know what real hypocrisy you have. Here we have a far-left affirmative action judge named Sotomayor, who was pushed into the Supreme Court by the far left, the same nefarious group that pushed Obama into the White House. And this cretin, Schumer, has the nerve to say that she's going to lead the Supreme Court back to the mainstream, which is what this country needs. What an insult that is to Clarence Thomas. What an insult that is to the other fine people on the Supreme Court. What a real insulting man this bum from Brooklyn is, this Schumer. This illegitimate senator from Brooklyn, Upchuck Schumer, who is diverting tens of millions of dollars to cronies through TARP money, with the Cash for Clunkers program. This illegitimate senator from New York has a lot of gall saying that Sotomayor, a far-left radical affirmative action judge, will lead the Supreme Court back to the mainstream. Now, let me remind you of something else. You're going to hear a lot about the fact that she has broken through a new barrier, that she is the first Hispanic on the Supreme Court. That's a lie. The first Hispanic on the Supreme Court was named Benjamin Nathan Cardozo, who lived between May 1870 and 1938. He was a Supreme Court justice. Now, the left does not consider Cardozo Hispanic because he was Jewish. You see, both Cardozo's maternal grandparents, Sarah Sykesas and Isaac Mendes Sykesas Nathan, and his paternal grandparents, Ellen Hart and Michael Cardozo, were Sephardic Jews of the Portuguese Jewish community affiliated with the Manhattan's congregation Shireth Israel. Their families immigrated from England before the American Revolution and were descended from Jews who left the Iberian Peninsula for Holland during the Inquisition. And so because He was from Portugal, and because he was a man, and because he was of Jewish descent, the vermin on the left, who are all anti-Semites, even though many of them are Jews, did not consider Cardozo of Hispanic descent. But make no mistake about it, although Cardozo was a member of the Spanish and Portuguese Jewish community, the radical left communists do not consider him the first Hispanic justice. And the reason is that they want to use the left-wing Sotomayor as their poster girl of affirmative action. In other words, she is going to be used as a battering ram to beat down whatever vestiges of fairness are left on the Supreme Court. Again, don't be obotomized. Don't take the obotomy. The protests are growing. Did you know that a new poll from CNN, CNN formerly a left-wing organization, soon to be called right-wing, because they put out a poll that says after 6 months, more view Obama as a failure than Bush did after 6 months. That's from the newly released CNN poll. So soon CNN will be called a member of the far right. Anyone who disagrees with this communist, this Maoist Obama and his Chicago gang is immediately tar-brushed as a member of the right wing. Don't take the obotomy. Don't be obotomized. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Listen to clip 22. It gets even more nauseatingly lurid. Lurid. Listen to 22.
This is the American dream. It's the dream that we all speak about when we campaign. What we've done now has made it real.
Now, why would an Irishman from Vermont be so happy to appoint a female Hispanic who was pushed ahead, not because of her judicial prowess, not because she's written anything anyone can remember, but because she was Hispanic and a woman? Why would he be so proud of that? Why would Feinstein, in clip 23, gush so much about Sotomayor? Listen to 23.
Now, finally, here we are, and we have a new Supreme Court justice. And I think it's truly a great day for the United States Supreme Court. I think it's a great day for the law. I think it's a great day for justice. I think it's a great day for every young woman out there that says, yes, I can do it if I work hard.
And if I'm a minority and I'm pushed ahead based upon my ethnicity. That is true. It's real good for those who can't make it based on grades or brains, but who can make it on ethnicity or sexuality. You're right, Feinstein. It's really good. This is what happens after a revolution. Then, of course, there was the Hollywood blockbuster produced by Bill Clinton's friends in Hollywood. And in the New York Post says is calling this rescue of the two young ladies from North Korea's Iron Curtain by Bill Clinton, put together by Bing Shangri-La Entertainment Firm. That's a man from Hollywood, a good friend of Bill. It said Bing Shangri-La Entertainment Firm also funded a major logistical effort to carefully showcase Clinton's arrival in Tinseltown, which featured Ling lauding the former president while almost in tears. And that is because the Clintons are waiting in the wings. They know that Obama's failing. They know he's falling. They cannot believe that their reentry to the White House was blocked by an upstart gang from out of the country. After all, if you are the Clintons and you've had power for so long and you know how the wheels of power work, and suddenly a man whose birthplace is unknown, a man who nobody knew as near as he had 2 years ago, is suddenly pushed into the White House with wads of cash and phony votes, you too would be waiting in the wings. And I think you're going to be shocked to hear me say this, but I think this country would be safer with Hillary Clinton in the White House than with this nefarious group, and we don't know who they are, and their front man, Obama, in the White House. That's my feeling. That is not to say I wouldn't prefer an actual conservative, but since there are none, I would say that Hillary might be more trustworthy and perhaps a little less dangerous than is this radical communist government that we have now, who has usurped the White House and taken over the government. That's my opinion. So we can talk about this and that. I guess you can talk about it if you want. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Chris in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation from KNEW. Go ahead, please.
Michael, Justice Cardozo, if he's Portuguese, he can't be Hispanic. Hispanic has everything to do with the Spanish language. As a dual citizen of the United States and Portugal, however, proud to be an American first, of course, not very offended, but just wanted to correct you on that fact. If you said he's the first Latin justice, I'd say you're 100% correct.
Well, Webster's Dictionary defines Hispanic, quote, of or relating to the language, people, or culture of Spain or Spanish-speaking Latin America. Do you agree with that?
I do.
Okay. So, therefore, he doesn't count, Cardozo.
No, he's Latin, not a Hispanic.
I see. So she's not Latin, then. She's Hispanic.
Yes. But she's both.
So she is not of Latin descent.
She's of Latin descent, but Hispanic.
No, you can't have it both ways. You said to me that she is of Hispanic descent and Cardozo is not. You said that he is of Latin descent. Now, how could she be both of Latin and Hispanic descent, but you have defined him as only of Latin but not Hispanic descent?
You understand
what we're both saying here. You're using rhetoric to change reality. The reality is that he was the first Hispanic Supreme Court justice, or if you prefer, the first Latin Supreme Court justice. Would that make you happier?
I prefer Latin since he's from Portugal. And we
I see. Now, what is the big deal, by the way, of someone being of Latin or Hispanic descent? Does that make them smarter or morally superior in some way that I'm not aware of?
As a person of Portuguese descent, I don't think it makes me any better than the average person on the street. It doesn't make
well,
me any
I'm glad you say that, but according to Charles Schumer, apparently she has a superior morality than people of other descents.
Well, I just came back from the Iberian Peninsula this past weekend, and they have no animosity towards Americans. They think we're exactly equal, nothing like that.
Who cares what they think? What do I care what they think? Why am I listening to you? All I hear is what other people think of America. I'm so sick of this. This started out a few years ago with Bush when he turned into the pinko that he was, saying, we want to know what they're saying on the Arab street. I don't give a damn what they're saying on the Arab street, where women are treated like cattle and people are brutalized. I want them to care what we think of the Arab street. I'd like the people in the Iberian Peninsula to worry about what we Americans think of them. I'm sick of the world going upside down. I'll be right back.
With this historic vote, the Senate has affirmed that Judge Sotomayor has the intellect, the temperament, the history, the integrity, and the independence of mind to ably serve on our nation's highest court.
Look who's talking. Look who's talking, the intellect and the morality. Here's a man who taught constitutional law, who's violating the Constitution at every turn, and he's telling us that she has the intellect to be a Supreme Court justice. Can anyone listening to the Savage Nation right now change my mind by citing one legal finding of Sotomayor that you think is so brilliant that all of the world should know of it? After all, the law is a body of work. After all, we've had Supreme Court justices who were brilliant, both legally and on a literary level. Can you name one thing that Sotomayor wrote that is brilliant, either from the legal perspective or from the literary perspective? Perhaps I'm ignorant. Perhaps because I am not a liberal, I am ignorant. I realize that although I myself have authored 25 books, and although I have two master's degrees and a real PhD, I may not be as enlightened as Al Franken, Senator Franken, that is, the horses behind, who actually introduced Sotomayor, which is laughable. It was unbelievable to listen to that one. Now listen to this, just gets posted. After 6 months, more view Obama's presidency as a failure than Bush's did after 6 months. Now here's an interesting thing. I'm reading to you. A rather surprising finding from the newly released CNN poll. Question 3 on the national survey of 1,136 adults, parenthesis, which includes an oversample of African Americans. Wait a minute. Why would CNN include an oversample of African Americans? Well, for one, CNN is a leftist-Leninist operation, and naturally they oversample a group that they think is going to give them the answers that they want to post as reality. But instead, it hits them in the face. So even though the CNN sample included an oversample of African Americans, which they skewed in order to bend the results, they came out the other way anyway. 37% said they believe the Obama administration is a failure. At the same time, 6 months into the Bush administration, CNN Gallup USA Today survey, 56% said the Bush administration was a success, only 32% considered it a failure. So already the American people are on to the fact that this guy is an imposter. He is the imposter. And don't be Obamaized is the main lesson today. Do not be Obamaized by the vermin in the media. Don't let men like Wolf Blitzer, who is the closest thing to a department store dummy who can talk, tell you anything about anything. Don't let any of those half men at NBC, ABC, or CBS, or MSNBC, don't let any of those pancake made-up half men tell you anything. And by the way, if you're going to go to a town hall meeting, shout it out like a real American. Don't be afraid of the bagel woman from Brooklyn, Barbara Boxer. Don't be afraid of anything any of these fraudulent criminals say to you. Who the hell do they think they are? Who the hell do these senators think they are to tell the actual people you have no voice in this country? Who the hell do these people think they are to say that illegal aliens have a voice, but you, the voters and the taxpayers, don't? Who the hell do these gangsters think that they're talking to? You stand up and you shout it out and you tell them to go to hell. You wave the Bibles as many times as you want. You bring crosses in and put them in front of these vampires. You put a cross in front of the vampires, and that's the only way you're going to get what you want. You tell these gangsters to listen to you. This is our country. It does not belong to illegal aliens. It does not belong to the criminals who have hijacked the Senate and the Congress. And let me tell you something, and you write this down. If I was so wrong, and if I was so out of the mainstream, I would not have the third largest radio show in America after 15 years in the business. I would not have 4 New York Times bestsellers in a row. I can guarantee you that I am closer to the mainstream than Sotomayor or Schumer or Boxer. And you can take that to the bank. Don't be obotomized. Don't accept an obotomy. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number, of course, you know. The website, you don't know. It's michaelsavage.com, where you can see the words obotomy and obotomized. We do not know if the hemorrhoid with ears has stolen it yet. Apparently, his ears are so fast he can steal phrases from me in real time.
Savage.
We're supposed to sit here and believe that the appointment of Sotomayor to the Supreme Court is going to change America for the better. Remember the rubbish in the 80s, the year of the woman? Or was it the 90s when many women entered the Senate for the first time? Many of them. We were told that loudmouths from Brooklyn like Boxer, complete imposters like Feinstein from San Francisco, when they became senators, we were told it would be a kinder, gentler U.S. Senate. Has it become a kinder, gentler U.S. Senate since these wonderful, polite, distinguished dignitaries entered the U.S. Senate? So, therefore, the American people are not so easily fooled. We have the embarrassment of Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House, first woman Speaker. We were told that was going to be a great thing. Remember? Same rubbish. The beginning of something wonderful, bringing us to the mainstream. Here you have Nancy Pelosi pushing the approval of 3 Gulfstream 550 jets to ferry her and her family around the nation, $65 million apiece. Here is a woman who has treated the United States as a toilet bowl, who treats the American people like serfs, and we're supposed to believe that these liberals care for the people? We're supposed to believe that they really mean all power to the people? They don't mean all power to the people. They meant all power to the left-wing people. They don't want all power to the people by any means. Palm Beach, Florida. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about your beef with the other conservatives on the radio.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think they're false because I listened to them for a long time, and a friend of mine turned me on to you, and I was amazed. I was like, well, I didn't ever hear of them. They never talk about you, and I'm like, this guy blows them away. I totally turned off to all the other guys, and I agree with them about 90% of the time, but you, my friend, are a breath of fresh air, and thank God you're an American citizen, and God bless you, because you make my day. You make
Thank you for all of the kind words. Are you aware that Obama's friends in the British government have banned me from entering the country, even though I didn't apply to enter? They said that I was as bad as murderers and criminals who were in jail?
Yes, that's around the time I started listening to you about it, like when that all started happening.
Are you aware that false conservatives such as the golfer, the wall banger, and the hemorrhoid refuse to mention this abrogation of free speech of a fellow talk show host, someone who is their competitor, for sure, but someone who is in the same business as them, certainly? Are you aware of the fact that the hemorrhoid, the golfer, and the wall banger will not mention this subject?
It's a disgrazia, an Italian, they say. I turn my back on them. I really do, because you're a real conservative. They talk a good game, but you're for it, and I love you.
Well, we'll see what happens when they're put on a banned list. We'll see who comes to their aid. Thank you for joining the Savage Nation. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. Now I want to talk about the war in Afghanistan. You remember all of the protests against the war in Iraq? No war for oil. The pinkos going into the Congress and the Senate screaming and yelling and throwing pig blood, whatever they did. Where is Code Stinko now that we don't need them? Where have all the good leftists gone? They were never against the war. They were against Bush. Because although he was a pinko, he wasn't red enough for them. Make no mistake about it, he was a pinko. But they didn't want a pinko, they wanted a red-o. Now that they have a red-o, they're silent. Where are they? They're all in the White House. They're working for him. He has taken cop haters from the streets of Oakland and put them in the White House with a monster budget to create the equivalent of the brown shirts, the SA. Huge story. The vermin in the media won't touch it. But as we speak, Obama is creating a militarized federal police force that answers only to him. They are not armed yet, but they're using stimulus money to fund this group of thugs. They certainly won't call them the SA. They won't call them the brown shirts, but I can guarantee you that they're going to be appearing very shortly. And when they do, when Obama finally has the police force that is loyal only to him of nationalist and anti-nationalist thugs on his side, and he arms them, what are you going to do then? You're going to say it's good for America? Tell me what you're going to do then. Chicago, Kathy, you're on the Savage Nation.
I'll tell you, we're sick of it, Michael. We're tired. You're right. We are furious, absolutely furious. And we don't need any talk show host organizing us. And I don't give a damn what that Reid says or Pelosi says. These are grassroots efforts, okay? Let me tell you about one that's going to happen September 12th.
But, Kathy, I'm not going to cut you off. Why would Nancy Pelosi and Boxer have the nerve to say that people at town hall meetings are stooges of some nefarious anti-American group and that they're Nazis? Where do they get the nerve to say that?
Because they're scared, okay? They only know how to, think of how they operate, okay? It was okay for them to have their little organized efforts, okay? But when the right tries to do it, it's wrong.
Do you know that this nation, the United States of America, was created by citizens resisting the British?
Right. And
do you know that the citizens had had enough of the British that they started to resist the British? And do you know that in the beginning this resistance was not supported by most of the colonists or Americans? 20% of the American citizens at that time were still loyal to the king, and they did not want the other Americans to protest the king. They were very happy being subjects of the king. You know that, don't you?
Well, no, I don't, but it's enlightening, and I'm happy you've said that. You know, so they were a bunch of followers. Okay, well, we're not.
Yeah, 20% of the people said, don't fight the king. We have it good enough as a colony. Right now, you have no more than 20% of the people saying be loyal to King Obama. It's no more than 20%. It's that the 20% include 100% of the media. That's why you think that the numbers are much larger than there are. 80% of the taxpayers in this country, 80% of the taxpayers in this country are onto the fact that this man is an imposter.
Their little psychological warfare isn't going to work. I'm telling you, these are grassroots efforts, okay? We've got one going on for September 12th, okay? It's in the far west suburbs of Chicago, okay? It's going to extend from Crystal Lake all the way down to Aurora, down Randall Road, and it's the Liberty. It's called the Liberty Trail Event. And if you Google that, you can find it on the web. It's Joe Miller who is organizing this. We don't need any, you know, talk.
Well, what I want to see is this snowballing to the point where all members of the resistance against the obotomy and all the people in America who refuse to be obotomized by the gangsters of New York who have robbed us blind, the Wall Street criminals. Make no mistake about it. The Wall Street criminals are who put Obama in power. You know that and I know that. Do you agree with me on that?
Yes, I do.
Where have the billions and billions of dollars gone? Where has the money gone? They're buying jets now for $65 million apiece. To ferry Pelosi and her children around America? This is not gangsterism. We've been taken over by a group of criminals, in the opinion of millions and millions of people who know what's going on. Millions of people know it. I want to see disparate groups joining together. The day that the motorcycle groups, and I mean from the far extreme violent motorcycle groups to the motorcycle groups that are disorganized and nonviolent, when they start joining the citizen groups and they start revving up their motorcycles outside town hall meetings, and they join the veterans, and they join all of the other Americans who've had enough of these frauds, you're going to see change in this country. You're going to have hope in this country. You're going to finally see the mask lifted off this joker. But just remember one thing, that a cornered rat is much more dangerous than a rat who is not cornered. So if you think that they're going to go away quietly into the night, even if 95% of the American people said, hell no, we won't go, hell no, we won't be lobotomized, you're mistaken. You're going to see the real fangs come out from beneath that benign mask. This is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449. Well, whatever, 8255. Sacramento, Siobhan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael Savage, I think I have figured out why you're so spectacular and why you understand things that the other conservative talk show hosts don't get. I think you personally vibrate at a very, very high level, a level that can see through all the muck and all the lies of all these politicians, and I think you scare the heck out of them.
Do you know that Harry Reid, the senator from Nevada, has also come out against healthcare protesters? Do you know that they're saying that these people are sabotaging the democratic process? Can you believe this?
No, I can't believe this.
Can you believe they're calling actual democracy sabotage of democracy? Can you believe this?
It's
in other words, people who are saying, no, we're not going to let you destroy the most powerful medical system in the world. We're not going to let you turn us into Cuba. We're not going to let you rob trillions of dollars more out of our pockets. We're not going to let you control us from cradle to grave with prescription drugs. Hell no, we won't go. We're not going to be obotomized. Suddenly, the people who are speaking out, all power to the people, these people are suddenly sabotaging democracy. How in the world does he think he's going to get away with that?
I don't know. I think they've been getting away with so much for so long that they just feel emboldened to the point where their ridiculousness is so transparent that finally the regular American people are starting to see it.
Hmm. Well, let's go back to your original call, Siobhan. You say, I vibrate at a different level. What do you mean by vibrate?
Well, there's this theory of vibration, and like Jesus Christ was a high vibrator, they say when he would walk into a town, the whole feeling of the town would change because of his vibration. And high vibration is somebody that understands the truth, that could see a situation that's very deceptive but can see through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you do. No matter
well,
what.
Well, we ought to play Good, Good, Good Vibrations by the Beach Boys. I think that's what we should play. Thanks for the compliments. Guys, play Good Vibrations. I was never into vibrations, but it's got a sort of almost negative connotation when you use the word vibration because it's related to the vibrator and all of that, so we won't go there.
She's giving me
you know what I'm saying? So therefore, I take it for what it will. I'm having trouble here with my computer again. I'd like to break it. Computers destroyed America. Computer has destroyed America. People who are idiots think they're smart because they can text message each other as in hieroglyphics. They may as well be sending smoke signals. Don't send the error report. Internet Explorer has encountered a problem and needs to close. We are sorry for the inconvenience. I can't take it anymore. I was happier without the computer. I was much happier before the computer. I didn't have as many problems as I have in my life now. Computer problems. 1-800-449-8255. Minnesota, Sean, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm a new listener and a huge fan. Just wondering what your thoughts and beliefs and feelings are on deja vu.
Well, I've had the few deja vus, mainly when I was young and smoked pot. But since I haven't smoked pot in 30, 40 years, I haven't had many deja vus. I think it's overrated. I think it's related to drug usage primarily. Although occasionally there will be the deja vu. It's probably some kind of memory confusion based upon exhaustion. What do you think?
Well, I really have no. I almost feel like I've done it before and I have to redo things to correct maybe wrongs.
Oh, you mean you've lived this life before, the whole thing?
Well, that's what I kind of feel, you know, because you get it, and then all of a sudden it takes you a couple seconds to realize it just happened, and I am not a drug user.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, and I wasn't going to be a wise guy. I mean, you don't use...
No, I do not use it, and I'm being honest with you, but yeah, I just, you know, I
used to get them. As I say, when I used to smoke dope as a youth, I'd get deja vus, but that was the drug, you know. I haven't smoked in 30, 40 years, so I don't use that garbage. It's poison. It's called, you know, what it's called for a reason. It distorts people's minds, which is why it's been legalized in a sub-rosa manner by the government. The reason they've legalized marijuana is they want more and more people to be malleable. They want them to take the obotomy. And so the more people who are on drugs, the more people who are on marijuana, the more easily they are obotomized. You understand that? I'll be right back.
Savage.
.49825 report just came out that Fannie Mae wants another how much, Beowulf? $10 billion? $10 billion more for Nancy Pelosi to buy another fleet of jets, and Feinstein, I guess, to buy some shopping carts for the poor of the world through her husband's front company, for Boxer to buy lingerie stores for South America. We don't know what they're going to do with the money. Why do they need $10 billion more? Where's it going? It's going in the pockets of their supporters and friends. This is called criminal activity. This is what the people have had enough of. This is why they're turning up at the town hall meetings screaming and shouting, and it's going to get worse. The illegitimate criminals are going to hear from the people now. It's going to become a crescendo. They will not take this anymore. The gangsters of Wall Street are so greedy. They're feasting on the fat of the land. But no matter how much you give these pigs, who are all summering now in Martha's Vineyard, no matter how much these pigs on Martha's Vineyard get, it's not enough for them. Don't you understand how the pigs of Wall Street operate? A pig can never have enough mud. No matter how much mud you give them to roll in, the pig wants more mud. So the pig says, $10 billion more. That's how it works. Savannah, Georgia. Jason, go ahead, please.
Hey, Mr. Savage, I think I respect you, but you're mistaken on one issue when it comes to why these radio talk show hosts seem to be ignoring you. It's not the fact that they're ignoring you. It's just that we have so many other issues, more important issues, going on in this country. Who cares if you're banned in Britain? That doesn't matter here.
Well, you see, Jason, here's your problem. Obviously, you're an ignorant man who thinks he's smart. Can you tell me what's more fundamental to a democracy than freedom of speech?
Britain is not our democracy.
Well, sir, excuse me. I am an American talk show host who has been banned by a Western democracy for speaking out on the issues. Is that not a free speech issue?
Britain has been.
Well, I know you're having trouble saying the word Britain, but the fact of the matter is they banned me because of what I said here. Don't you see the connection?
This president is taking us into the wrong direction.
Jason, listen to me. The town hall meetings are based upon what? Free speech, is that correct?
In this country.
No, I understand that, but what's the difference between free speech here and free speech in Britain? Why do you think those two reporters were just banned in North Korea and arrested? Wasn't it based upon freedom of speech?
Stick to what's going on here.
No, wait a minute. You know, your ignorance is so overwhelming that I'm actually going to spend another minute with you trying to penetrate your thick skull. Why were those two reporters just banned in North Korea and imprisoned? Was it not based upon freedom of speech?
Now, that's another issue.
Why is that another issue?
Reason why that's another issue, they're in prison. All right, we got to get our citizens back because they're our citizens.
Well, wait a minute. Why should we care it was in North Korea? Your logic, we shouldn't care about two reporters who were imprisoned in North Korea because they're in North Korea. Why should we care about them?
We should care about them.
Oh, we should, but we shouldn't care about me not being able to go into a Western democracy based upon sound bites that were taken out of context. That doesn't affect everyone in America one way or another?
Care about Britain. Let's worry about our citizens. Let's worry about what's going on in this nation.
Jason, your ignorance exceeds your ability to grasp what even you are saying. So at this particular junction, I will say, have a nice day. A man defined hell as a place where there is no reason. You have just left hell. We are now back in the heaven of free speech on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. New York City, WOR. James, welcome to the program.
Michael, I just want to say you are the best talk show host on radio, hands down. Nobody says it more real than you. Every day, 6 o'clock, I tune in. I'm telling you, Michael Savage for president. The passion you speak with, the energy, the intelligence you speak with, I mean, it's all there, and I feel like you're just a super powerful speaker, and you just absorb, and people, like that woman said, the vibrations you give the best type of vibration I can get. It's the realest.
Well, I try my best. I mean, I'm not running for any office. I would never go into politics. I think that's for people with a different type of mentality and a different type of morality than I have. I believe that the best and the brightest do not go into politics. The brightest people I know are not politicians. Some of the worst people I've ever met in my life are politicians. Usually they are failures who could not make it in academics or in business. They go into politics because it's an easier road for them. They're extremely jealous of successful people. They are hateful people, and they are little people. And that is why we have lost our country, because the best and the brightest have not gone into politics. The Lilliputians have.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
MichaelSavage.com, and you'll see the headline is Michael Savage coins new words, obotomy and obotomize. And as an example of what we're talking about, you'll see a picture of a horse's behind with Al Franken's face emanating from the orifice itself. That is an example of an individual who has been obotomized and would like you to take an obotomy. After 6 months, more view Obama as a failure than do those who were polled 6 months into Bush's term. Oh, yeah. Obama sends stimulus aid to foreign firms. Nearly half of the $2.4 billion in federal grant money awarded Wednesday went to six foreign firms. The imposter is being seen for what he is. A liar. A total and absolute dictator in the wings. The people are standing up. They're speaking out. the illegitimate senator from Brooklyn, Barbara Boxer, objects to protesters who are opposed to socialized medicine, saying that they're too well-dressed for her taste. I suppose she would prefer people who look more like her, people with baggy jeans or something. Tiger Attack men, you don't know who they are. The White House says that the war on terrorism is over. We are no longer engaged in a war on terrorism, nor can we use the word jihad or jihadists, because jihad, according to Obama's minions, means cleansing oneself for a holy and spiritual ascent. It no longer means cutting someone's throat as you chant to Allah. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the public relations man, Admiral Mike Mullen, says that the two nuclear submarines patrolling off the East Coast are not alarming. Did you hear this? America's top military stooge said today that yesterday that he does not consider two Russian nuclear submarines patrolling off the East Coast as a sign of a resurgence of the Cold War. This public relations stooge, Mike Mullen, who looks very nice in the uniform that they gave him, says that he's been working very hard in recent years to improve communication links with their Russian counterparts. And he said he's not alarmed by the Russian submarines off the Atlantic coast. He said he's very mindful of it. Well, I think that Mike Mullen should just put on a Russian uniform and say that he's actually very happy that the Russians have finally sent two submarines so that he could finally join his comrades. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't see what's going on. Obama puts a stooge into the national security apparatus who says that jihad is no longer a word we can use. There's no longer a global war against terrorism. He puts a stooge into the Joint Chiefs of Staff who says that two nuclear submarines off the coast of America are not alarming, but moreover, they're not only not alarming, but he's communicating with them. And that doesn't alarm you. And Obama wants to reduce our nuclear stockpile at the same time, while Russia will not reduce its nuclear stockpile. And instead, Russia moves ICBMs closer to our coast on routine patrols. And Mullenhead, Admiral Mike Mullenhead, the imbecile who was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says that he's not alarmed by this and that it's not a sign of a resurgence of the Cold War. A fifth grade student understands this as a resurgence of the Cold War. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. We can talk about anything you would like to talk about. Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Don, go ahead, please. Don, go ahead, please. Don, go ahead, please.
America.
Don, go ahead. Go ahead, Don. Don, go ahead.
If you do not start communicating with your youth through the media.
Don. Start again. No one understood a word you said. Please start again.
I apologize. If the conservative politicians and representatives in our country don't start communicating with our youth through the media that they use and understand, such as YouTube, MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, all of that, they're going to continue to fail.
I agree 1,000%. I totally agree. The youth are brainwashed. They're fools. They're ignorant children. They are slaves. They have no idea what danger they're in. They would gladly go along with a Marxist re-education camp because they're already 90% there. I totally agree with you. The children, the youth, are completely ruined in America. 100% ruined. They're brainwashed and they're drugged. They're a perfectly malleable group of people. They are much like Nutty Putty in the hands of these master manipulators from Chicago. Any other questions or comments? Because I've got the answers. Don't be obotomized. Don't take the obotomy. 1-800-449-8255. San Diego Joe, go. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you're a daily inspiration, and I pray that you have the strength every day to come on the air and share your wisdom with us.
Well, I don't know if I have the strength, but I just had a chocolate brownie and coffee. That helped.
Well, the coffee will help inspire you, but where does the DNC get the nerve to come off and put on a commercial that puts down everyday people, including veterans, who visit the VA hospitals around the country and know what kind of lousy medical care they get from the U.S. government? Where do the Congress people and the DNC get off?
The DNC are an illegitimate group of gangsters. The Democrat National Committee is run by criminals and gangsters, in my opinion. They are not American. They're attacking the real Americans. So I want to see more veterans go to more health care meetings. I want to see every motorcycle gang. I want to see every motorcyclist come to every protest in this country and rev their engines outside until these illegitimate gangsters get the message that they're outnumbered and that the Indians are about to revolt. How's that? Does that work for you? I want to see the motorcycles outside the town hall meetings. I want to see the tattooed men on motorcycles outside the town hall meetings. I want to see the people on all levels standing up to the illegitimate Marxists who have taken over this country, who are robbing us blind, who are fleecing us like sheep. How's that? Does that work for you?
Dr. Savage, I totally agree with that. But my problem is I've got a congressman who actually gets it. I would like to be able to go and talk to Boxer or Feinstein and let them have a piece of my mind. But you know what? They're too sheepish to come out and actually have a town hall meeting where I can
come. The last time Barbara Boxer met one of a constituent, she had to go into psychotherapy for 3 months, I understand. The last time Dianne Feinstein actually met one of a constituents, which was apparently in 1914, apparently she had to go into therapy for several years. Thanks for the call. We live in the Soviet Union, where the leaders of the Soviet Union, so-called the elites, they had the country houses, they had the black limousines with drivers and Secret Service, and the people were nothing but sheeple to them. That is what America has devolved into after 16 years of Clinton and Bush. We have become the new Soviet Union. Make no mistake about it, Obama is a newcomer to this game. It was 8 years of the Clintons, then 8 years of the Bush gang that gave us this illegitimate joker called Obama and the Chicago gang. So he's not something new. He's just part of the continuum. I don't know if there's any chance for the American people to take the country back. I just don't know if it can be done. I don't know how it's to be done. Maybe it has to be done one congressman and one senator at a time. I don't know if that could be done. I believe the money is so vast from Saudi Arabia, China, and other countries that an ordinary American citizen wouldn't stand a chance to run for office. I think they would be swamped with the money being circulated through the vermin of Wall Street, burying anybody who stood up to stand up to them. That's my opinion. Austin, Texas, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Yesterday, I had a debate with my friend's father, who is basically a Marxist. I am 14 years old. I read Paul Johnson. I read the National Review, so I kind of get into debates sometimes with people. And my friend's father, we talked about a bunch of things, but basically we just talked about the Great Depression and Israel, and I couldn't respond to him. The main thing he had said, because he's one of those leftists that believes that Israel is, you know, committing genocide against the Palestinians, and they're so evil. So
in other words, he's a Jew-hating loser. What's new about that? The Nazi Party was built on that.
Yeah. Well.
So what is he, a white trash Jew hater? Is that it, who never amounted to beans in his life, and he thinks the Jews took his birthright from him? Is that who this bum is?
Well, I don't know, but...
Wait a minute. Did this bum ever work for a living? What did this bum do, the Marxist?
I don't know. I don't know what my friend's dad does.
Wait a minute. You know your friend's father well enough to have a conversation with him. Did the bum ever work?
Well, yeah, he works, but I never asked my friend what his father does.
Well, how could he be a Marxist and have work? What did he work at?
Capital. He's read the manifesto. He's read all that.
So, in other words, he thinks after the revolution he's going to wind up on top, and all the Jews are going to wind up giving him a shoe shine. Is that it?
Well, I'm not sure, but he made one...
Well, wait, you called up about some unknown white trash vermin in Texas somewhere. So what's the point of the call if you know nothing about him?
Well, I don't know about him, but I want to talk about one of his points that he made that I couldn't counteract.
Oh, okay. So what are one of the points of this unknown moron made?
Well, he actually has Native American descent. He used that on me. He said that, what if the European powers had arbitrarily decided to make the state of Maryland just like a haven for the Native Americans?
All right, so he's a malcontent. What is the point of the call? The country's filled with losers like him.
Yeah.
What else is new? He thinks Obama's going to give him back a state? He's going to wind up a chief again sitting in a teepee with eight wives?
Actually, he was a Hillary Clinton supporter. He didn't like Obama. He was a Clinton.
Sounds like a real crank. I've met many of these leftists. Most of them teach at universities. How old are you? You said you're 14?
Yes.
Well, you got a lot of guts for a 14-year-old to talk to an old man like him. But the next time you talk to him, I'll give you some advice. Ask him what he actually worked at in his life. Ask him if he ever produced anything of any value to anybody in society. Ask him what he thinks will occur if there should be a total and absolute communist takeover of America. Ask him what he thinks will benefit from it. When you get those answers, take two aspirin and call me. 1-800-449-8255. Bill in New Hampshire, welcome to the Savage Nation.
It is obvious to me and natural that the conservatives in this country would hang Michael Savage out to dry. They fancy themselves as disciples of William F. Buckley. They consider themselves distinguished members of the Eastern establishment. And then along comes Michael Savage with his blunt, non-pretentious American common man approach to life. His accent and his manner of speaking is without pretense. And what galls them the most is that Michael Savage, without their background and heritage, nonetheless is a recognized scholar, a PhD, and a Renaissance
You're
man.
You're absolutely right. In other words, I did it without any of their help, so therefore they hate my guts. I understand that. You first had to bow down to the jerks at the National Review. Then you had to get on your hands and knees to some other East Coast phonies there in order to get ahead. I bypassed them all, so of course they hate me. I did it based on brains and gall. That's all. Brains and brawn. That's how I got where I am. So, of course, they despise me. So what else is new? Anybody who makes it on their own, they despise.
And because of that, they're sitting back quietly relishing the fact that you're in trouble in Britain, and you're hated by both them and the liberals in this country.
Well, I'm actually in a place I want to be, because to me, the liberals and the Republican establishment are one and the same. There is no difference between the Buckley conservatives and the ruling elite liberals. They're all one and the same. They're part of the same cabal, Bill. They keep changing form. But remember, it was 8 years of the Clintons and then 8 years of the Bushies that gave us Obama. So what's the difference between the Clinton establishment and the Bush establishment? Virtually nothing.
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 Do not retire. As you said before, if I don't do this, what? The answer is nothing. What you're doing is what will satisfy you.
Now, I want to ask you something, Bill. You sound as a man who's been around a while. What age bracket are you in?
I'm the same as yours.
You're another old codger like me, huh?
I've lived through some of it. I've had a chance to think and observe. I've gone
yes.
through stages where I spoke politically correct. I've rejected it all, and I just relish, A, what you say, B, how you say it. No fancy.
Because I speak with the common parlance of the average man in my own accent, but it resonates across gender, across race, across culture, and across society, Bill. And I want to thank you very much for speaking to me today on the Savage Nation. When I come back, I want to talk about a documentary last night I saw called War Dogs of the Pacific. It was one of the most touching documentaries I've ever seen in my life. It tells the story of the Marine dog platoons of World War II. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I never picked him out. He picked me out.
They trained for 8 hours a day. That's the only person the dog knew.
Their smell and hearing is so acute.
I couldn't imagine going into a jungle without a dog.
I know they were close before they ever got there.
But oh my God, they're shooting their bullets.
They saved hundreds of lives, including mine.
There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of that dog.
All right, so I one of my favorite channels is military history, or the history channels in general, or National Geographic. So last night I stumbled upon War Dogs of the Pacific documentary story of the Marine dog platoons of World War II. And they show these men, the Marines, they must be in their 80s when they were interviewed for this, or older. And these are the men who saved us from Hitler. These are the men without whom we would be speaking German or we'd be lampshades. These are the men who, when you look at them, I mean, they bring tears to your eyes. And then they flash back to these men in Saipan when they were in their 20s. You see the young man and the old man. And when they were young men, they were dog handlers. And the dogs were largely either, what were they, Doberman Pinschers or German Shepherds. And the interesting part was is that they were given to these men by ordinary American citizens, and they were trained to kill. They were trained to hunt out Japanese in the jungles. And you look at the tales of devotion and bravery and sacrifice by the dog handlers themselves and the dogs, and the bond between the men and the dogs from Saipan, Okinawa, and Iwo Jima. If this doesn't stir you, and this doesn't make you appreciate canines more, you are hopeless.
Savage.
Let me go on for a minute for this document. I was talking about War Dogs of the Pacific, where U.S. Marines teamed up with dogs, largely Doberman Pinschers and those incredible other dogs, to hunt out the Japanese in Guam, Saipan, Okinawa, and Iwo Jima. Now, these are rock-hard men. These are the best, just the best men America has ever seen, and we still have many of them, believe me, in the military. Best men in the world, and that's why I supported them when Bush permitted them to be hung out and dried with false court martials. Some of them are still hanging out there. I gave my own money. Many of you contributed money to Colonel Chesani's cause because Bush could have pardoned them. He never did. Instead, he pardoned drug dealers and other criminals. It's unbelievable what these two administrations have done to our military. So when I look back, when I watch these documentaries of World War II, and I see the faces, these are ordinary Americans fighting the hardest kind of fight there is, you know, hand-to-hand combat, smoking out the Japanese in caves, also very hard men. And you reach a point where you see the dogs. Now, these guys are now doing jungle fighting. They're afraid of snipers, Japanese snipers. A man's senses can only see and hear and smell so far. But a dog's senses are hundreds of times greater, obviously. So a dog is, I think, 400 times greater sense of scent than a man. Never mind the hearing, okay? So they're in the jungle now. They're creeping along, hoping they don't get killed from a Japanese sniper, let us say, on Okinawa or Iwo Jima or Saipan. And they need a dog. So they got the dogs now. The dogs now are let go, and the dogs go ahead of them. The dog can hear a Japanese sniper in a tree 100 yards away. So they knock him out of the tree. Many, many American men were able to live, come home, contribute to society, create a family because of the dogs. They saved many lives in the Pacific. And if you watch this, and then you see that the Japanese learned that the dogs were real threats to them, they started shooting the dogs first. And then they flash back to one of the older gentlemen who was a Marine in one of these theaters of operation. And he says, after they shot one of our dogs, we really got mad. And you see the grit come out in this guy. And, you know, when he says we really got mad. But then you see other scenes in there that are going to rip your guts out. For example, one of the dog handlers, remember, these dogs were trained to kill, number one. They were ordinary dogs from households, voluntarily given to the military. They were trained to attack and kill by military dog handlers. They had to be trained to kill. So now they're trained to kill. They're brought out into the islands to help fight the Japanese in World War II. And so they're also trained to kill anyone who tries to hurt their handler. Talk about, you know, loyalty. They show one of the handlers getting shot. The Marine medic goes in to treat him. The dog lets the medic treat the handler. When the man dies, the dog suddenly becomes atavistic, growls, snaps, and threatens the Americans who want to come near the dead body. You look at a thing like this, and, you know, you have to understand, you have to own a dog to understand what this scene is. That the dog, trained to protect that man, will protect that man's corpse with his life. It's unbelievable. Then you see men whose dogs get killed who go to pieces. You see men feeding the dogs the last of their own rations. You see men giving the dog the last bit of food that they have. The dog becomes the last thing they have that they love in the world, in the middle of the hell that they were put. Then you see scenes of men who go to pieces. There was one scene in passing. I don't know if anyone's seen this last night. I had seen something like this once before in my life, of men who break down in combat. I saw this before. I may have seen it in passing in some of the documentaries. But there was one scene that was astounding. Now, you're talking about the hardest men who were sent out into these island fights, hand-to-hand combat, the most horrendous, gut-tearing stuff you could ever imagine. We can only imagine what these men had to live through. I don't know if men could do this anymore. I really don't know if anyone could do it in the America of today. I truly don't know if they could do this anymore. I wonder if there are men left that could do this, or they're all locked up in Pelican Bay. I'm not sure anymore. I watched this show, and you see a man who broke down from the combat, from the ugliness, from the horror of the blood and the guts and the killing and the murder. And he's crying like a baby, sucking his thumb. It's unbelievable to see this in the middle of this. And another Marine is holding him with his arm around him. And he's sitting there crying and shuddering like a baby, sucking his own thumb. He had a total crack up in the midst of this ugly, horrendous combat. Now, this was in passing. But, you know, we're talking about something else, which is the dog thing, the war dogs of the Pacific. But I'm bringing that up as a side note. Okay, so now the war ends. The Army shoots their dogs. You hear this? The Army decides that all the dogs that fought so loyally in World War II should be killed. They shoot all the dogs that they used. The Marines refused to go along with the program. In other words, in those days, they would not be obotomized. The Marines said, go to hell, we're not shooting our dogs, we'll shoot you first. So the Marines said, we're not shooting them. We're not going to go along with the Obama program of the day, in other words, just because Big Brother told us to. We'll shoot you first. We're not killing our dogs. They were our best friend. They kept us alive, dropped dead. So the Marine Corps backs up. The fat asses back home who decided to shoot the dogs suddenly, the fat asses back in Camp Lejeune who never fought, suddenly get frightened of the Marines and say, all right, we won't kill the dogs. Meanwhile, they have 540 killer dogs in their hands, and they don't know what to do with them. So you know what the men say? We will retrain them to become domesticated again. And they work 12, 15 hours a day, and they do teach old dogs new tricks, and they retrain them to be able to integrate back with families. So out of the 540 or so dogs that fought with the men in the Pacific who were killers, trained to kill, only four had to be euthanized. It's a story that is astounding, and I would highly recommend that you try to catch War Dogs of the Pacific on the Military History Channel when it's replayed, and I don't know when it'll be replayed. The historical footage and never-before-seen photos are astounding. And it was done by a director named Harris Dunn, who was a graduate of the USC School of Cinema, and he earned a degree in film production. But he did, thrillers such as, family comedies, Bonjour, Buddy. But this feature documentary directing debut with War Dogs of the Pacific about the Marine War dog handlers of World War II is astounding. Any dog lover should watch this, and it'll give you a new appreciation for not only the intelligence of dogs, the loyalty of dogs, but the devotion and the bravery and sacrifice of the United States Marine Corps. This is the Savage Nation. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Washington, D.C., WTNT. Jay, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yeah, it's Michael. I've been waiting for somebody to talk about this subject a long time. Actually, one of the Marines that was instrumental in keeping those dogs from being killed was a gentleman named Colonel William Putney. Putney has a book you can read. It's called, of all things, it's called Semper Fi. It's about the third war dog company, and it discusses those many subjects that you've just gone over.
But he stood up to the Marine Corps brass and said, we're not killing them, I guess. That's what he had to do.
Correct. And his men loved him. All those families that got him. But he was alive up until about 4 years ago and passed away. But
there goes the last, where are they today? When they go and fight in Iraq, if they actually do the right job that they're trained to do, they get court-martialed by George Bush in the last administration, and probably with Michael Mullen now in the Joint Chiefs of Staff. A guy's afraid to fire a gun without consulting a manual.
He would have been outed. I mean, he would have never been on the Admiral Staff or flag officer back then. But this Colonel Putney, as far as I'm concerned, he should have got the Medal of Honor. But read that book, Semper Fi. And the one thing I want to
say, let me ask you, Jay, where is the dog cemetery that I saw at the end of the documentary? They apparently have a cemetery of these dogs somewhere. Where is that?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I'd have to go back.
I couldn't believe it. It was an actual war memorial cemetery for these heroic dogs. It was unbelievable. Thank you for the call. Here we have a caller from Los Angeles who says he knew Colonel Putney. Steve on KGIL, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Are you there, Dr. Savage?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes, I knew Dr. Putney. Guam was where they have the statue.
In Guam, that's where the dog's cemetery is.
Cemetery there. I met Dr. Savage when Dr. Putney when I was like 23 years old. He was 50 years old. We were the best of friends. We used to play golf together once a week.
What did he tell you about the whole dog program, Steve, that you could share with the audience today?
You know what? We became such good friends. I used to go. He had a dog kennel down in, Canoga Park that I used to go down with him all the time.
and I mean, this was after the war, of course.
We're talking 1973, 74.
So what I'm hearing is he continued his love for dogs into the latter part of his life, long after the war.
I think he passed away about 4 years ago. Yeah, he was a veterinarian when he passed away about 4 years ago.
Oh, he was a vet. The colonel was a veteran?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was a veterinarian? The vet was a veterinarian.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, big time. He talked to
me. And Steve, did he tell you any stories of the war that would be worth sharing right now?
Yes. He says, you know, when you were out in the walking around in the bushes and everything else and leading dogs, he wasn't so much the leader because he was the lieutenant. I think he went up to, like, captain or, I don't remember. But, you know what?
That's okay. I'm going to tell – thank you very much for that sharing. Now he brought back a memory from the documentary. Let's just let him throw one more piece in. After the men had shown how good these dogs were in combat, they were rewarded with another stripe. They were moved up the ranks. And then the commander said to them, but because you've moved up from corporal, you can no longer be a dog handler because that's for a lower-ranked man. The men, almost to a man, ripped the stripe off their body and said, we'd rather remain a corporal in order to stay with our dogs. No, thank you. You can keep your stripe. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Lockhart, Hugh Riley, John Provost as Timmy.
All right. Anyway, I grew up with a dog. I was very lucky. Even when I was a kid, I had a dog. I've had a dog all my life. Always had a dog. And, I wrote about Tippy and all in Psychological Nudity. He was the part chow. Lunatic dog. Ripped my foot open when I was 11. And now I have the smartest dog I've ever had in my life, which is a small 10-pound they call it a toy poodle. I don't like the word toy when it comes to an animal. There's nothing about a toy about him. It's like a condensed poodle. You say poodle, you think foo-foo, weak. You know, a real standard poodle is not a weak dog. They're phenomenal watchdogs. And a small one, well, let me put it to you this way. Would you like to be bitten by a gopher? Would you like to be bitten by a rat? Would you like to be bitten by any animal with sharp incisor teeth? No. So why would you think that a 10-pound animal with sharp teeth is a weakling? You know, don't underestimate any dog. That's all I can tell you. If you've ever been bitten by a dog of any size, it's going to be quite an awesome experience. But Teddy is not a watchdog, okay? He's not an attack dog. He's just a companion. Great ears, great sense of smell. Sometimes I hold him in my arms. I love to hold him in my arms I'm out on a walk somewhere, and I see somebody in the distance. Now, because I'm a man, I'm taller than him. I hold him in my arms where I put his head up at my level and I say to him, what do you smell over there, Teddy? What do you hear over there, Teddy? And I love to watch that nose go to work, to watch the sensor call the nose and see the olfactory organs, you know, you see, and they start to inhale molecules out of the air, or you could see the ears. I love to watch dogs' actions. Anyway, I've always been a dog lover, right, in that regard. I remember one of the first books I ever got on dogs was called The Expression of the Emotions in Man and Other Animals by Charles Darwin. I know that won't go over very big with creationists, but it has nothing to do with creationism. It has to do with observationism. And Darwin was a heck of an observer, irrespective of whether you believe in evolution or not. It doesn't matter. He was one of the finest observers in history in terms of his capacity to understand comparative anatomy. But when he wrote The Expression of, I wonder where that book is. I'll never forget it, because he showed pictures of man and his various expressions, Darwin did, and in the same book he showed dogs' expressions and their various meanings. Keen observer. And Fannie Mae seeks $10.7 billion in USAID after second quarter loss. Talking about sniffing out rats, Fannie Mae seeks $10 billion in new USAID after posting $15.2 billion second quarter loss. Now, it doesn't take a dog with a keen sense of smell to smell a rat. And all I can tell you is that the people who are running Fannie Mae, if we lived in a sane America, would be given a life sentence for what they're doing to the taxpayers. After losing billions of dollars, they want billions more. Now, why wouldn't they want billions more if their friends in the Treasury Department are the ones taking your money, robbing you, to give them billions more? You know, you look at jails, they're filled with criminals of various stripes, some violent, some nonviolent. And there are hundreds of thousands of white-collar criminals who stole thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. But very few of the criminals in prison have stolen billions of dollars. We think of Madoff, but he's one of the very few billions of those who stole billions. Those who can steal billions usually don't go to jail. They go to government. And what they do is that they steal billions of dollars with the kosher stamp of the U.S. government, and they give it to the friends who put them in power. And then when they leave office, their friends are given the job as Treasury Secretary, FAA, FCC, SEC, USC, SEC, SME, LSMFT. And then they give their friends the billions of dollars, and you, the schmuck, and I, the schmuck, pay 50, 60% of our income in taxes to these criminals who are now all summering on Martha's Vineyard, conspiring how to rob you blind tomorrow for, let us see, health care overhaul to make sure illegal aliens can get coronary bypass treatment for free, to make sure that every illegal alien can have 16 to 20 relatives come in from Mexico and become more citizens so that there'll be no America left. So you see how it works, and you understand why the anger is growing, and you understand why Obama is manufacturing support for health care plans with his own minions. In other words, the left wing, the radical left wing, Boxer, Feinstein, Schumer, Reid, Obama, are telling you that the protesters against the health care reform are all manufactured by corporate interests. Well, what would you have called ACORN but manufactured support for Obama? What would you have called the Black Panthers with clubs in their hand but manufactured support for Obama? I would say that these town hall meetings and gatherings are more closely attuned to the actual American than were the manufactured town hall meetings that got Obama the imposter in office. So don't be obotomized. Don't give yourself an obotomy. Remember, the criminals have taken over the country. What else would you call it? Tell me if you think I'm wrong. You're telling me Fannie Mae, who bankrupted America, is entitled to stay in business? You're telling me that Fannie Mae says, oh, well, we lost a couple of billion in the first quarter, give me another $11 billion? You're telling me that's legitimate? Listen to this. We are dependent on the continued support of Treasury in order to continue operating our business, Fannie Mae said in an SEC filing late today. Let me read it again to you if you missed it. An SEC filing today from Fannie Mae says, we are dependent on the continued support of Treasury in order to continue operating our business. Now, who is it at Fannie Mae who gets the money from Treasury? Who is it at Treasury who writes them a check? And who is it Fannie Mae who gets the check? And why is Nancy Pelosi able to buy three Gulfstream 550 jets at $65 million apiece? I thought the money from the stimulus fund was supposed to give ordinary Americans jobs. Have you seen 3 million new jobs, anyone? Well, if you have, I have a rabbit I can pull out of my hat as well.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Vietnam War is still an emotional topic for most. Our military was successful in doing their jobs, but lies and pressure from the left and the media turned these victories into defeat. There's a new book out that recasts Vietnam's tainted image and tells inspiring stories of American heroism and the South Vietnamese relentless fight for freedom. It's entitled Ride the Thunder. Joining us now is the author Richard Botkin. Richard, what drove you to write this book?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thanks so much for having me on today. Ride the Thunder, and the full title really is critical here, Michael. Ride the Thunder, a Vietnam War story of honor and triumph. I had to add that line on there because there isn't much honor or triumph, personal honor and triumph, associated with our efforts in Vietnam. And Ride the Thunder itself comes from a Teddy Roosevelt speech I saw when I was a young Marine. And I am not a Vietnam veteran, by the way. I served after Vietnam. But Ride the Thunder comes from a Teddy Roosevelt speech in which he spoke of the men who quell the storm and ride the thunder. It was the man in the arena speech. It was a call to manhood. That Teddy Roosevelt was the last American president that had the guts to call men to meaning in their lives and to serve in higher causes. And that speech moved me as a young man. I carried it around, and I always thought if I wrote a book, it's going to be called Ride the Thunder, because Marines and soldiers, those who want to serve their country and serve in a higher cause, are romantics. And Teddy Roosevelt had the ability to stir people in that. And so anyway, this book is about a number of American Marine officers and South Vietnamese Marine officers who really rode the thunder. These were honorable guys. It's nothing more than a war story about good men facing tough times and overcoming those tough times. In addition, where appropriate, I included wives, because their wives, especially for the Vietnamese, were so critical in their ability to overcome the challenges they faced.
We hear from the radical left that the Vietnam War was not a just cause and we had no business being there, but your book tells a different story.
It does. It tells a different story in that we talk early on in Ride the Thunder about the American Marine involvement, especially my main American character, my main fighting American Marine character, a gentleman, Captain John Ripley. We talk about his first tour in 1967, in which he was a rifle company commander. Up near the northern portion of the country, up near the demilitarized zone. Incredible fighting on a daily basis. And we talk about his bayonet charge, something that is new history in talking with him and some of his Marines. The bayonet charge that he ordered up was miraculous in that it was successful. No Marines were killed, and the bad guys hightailed it out of the area. That was a fun thing to write about because of the obvious good outcome. It might have turned differently had not there been favorable intervention from above. I don't know. But what I try to do is give the reader an appreciation for what the American Marines were doing, and at the same time, talk about the South Vietnamese effort. That's something that has not been written, Michael, has not been written about in history, and certainly when the communists took over in the North, the victors get to write history. The good guy stuff was essentially written out of history.
This revision of history seems to have started during the Vietnam War by our own media.
I agree. The media trend was probably never very favorable in Vietnam at all, but especially with the Tet Offensive of 1968, when the Americans and South Vietnamese turned back the North Vietnamese invasion and essentially destroyed the Viet Cong infrastructure, They destroyed them and killed them by the tens of thousands, and yet the American will to fight that war was lost on the television sets, on American college campuses, and the political center of gravity moved from the battlefield into the United States where, again, college campuses and the political arena, there was really no hope of winning after that.
Why do you think Vietnam turned out the way that it did?
Good question, Michael. The events from basically the spring of 1972 onward were interesting. What happened in 1972, and we have this in Ride the Thunder, the American ground effort had essentially ceased. We had about 100,000 troops still in Vietnam, but most of these people were there to help the Vietnamese Vietnamize the war, if you will. They were support troops, combat support troops, but all the infantry types had already left. There were a few helicopter units that were involved in action, but really the major combat effort was now being prosecuted by the South Vietnamese. We had advisors there, and that's what we focus on in Ride the Thunder, my American Marine advisors. The communists launched in late March of 1972 the biggest offensive to date of the war, bigger by far than Tet of 68, which many Americans will recall. The Easter Offensive of 1972 began with an invasion of about four divisions, roughly 40,000 troops, hundreds and hundreds of tanks, and unprecedented amounts of rockets and artillery. They came across the demilitarized zone, which was by treaty not allowed for them to do, surprise, surprise. Anyway, they caught the South somewhat unawares, and the South ultimately beat them back thanks to the efforts of American air power and a very resilient and improving South Vietnamese military, Army and Marines, and these guys beat them back. Once that was had taken place, we go into the summer of 72. The South continues to push them back into the elections of 1972, and President Nixon is trying to craft some sort of peace treaty with the North Vietnamese. And many of our listeners may recall that wasn't successful. So we had the Christmas bombing of 1972. It was known as Operation Linebacker 2. And Linebacker 2, a 12-day bombing campaign, except for Christmas Day, they didn't bomb on Christmas Day, was considered to be the most intense bombing campaign of the war. And many believe, as I do, that the communists were close to coming to a surrender even, because we were just finally giving them what they should have gotten earlier, probably. But American political leadership did not exploit that advantage that we had. So anyway, we craft the peace with honor, in which there was no peace and no honor, in early 1973. American ground, or all American troops leave except for very few number of troops left. The POWs come home, and that was a huge issue for Americans. Americans who had demonstrated no patriotism or fervor for the troops who had fought there gave more to the POWs when they came home and gave them at least some sort of a heroic homecoming, their tumultuous parades, those sorts of things. But once the POWs were home and that treaty was crafted, American interest in the war trailed off. We had, right before the end of 72, given Vietnam all kinds of aircraft and supplies and equipment to make them effective on their own. They were known to have the fourth largest air force in the world. What people need to understand that those numbers aren't really that accurate. They had lots of airplanes. Most of them were helicopters. The Soviets had supplied the North Vietnamese with the latest anti-aircraft artillery. So where the Vietnamese were fighting, the South Vietnamese were fighting with helicopters and propeller-driven planes, they were going up against first-rate anti-aircraft artillery that even the best American airplanes at the time didn't have effective countermeasures for. Anyway, so we go into 73. And in the summer of 1973, after President Nixon, in order to get President Tu to agree to all these peace treaties, had promised him that if the communists broke the treaties, we would respond with American air power, the Congress passed something called the Fulbright-Aiken Amendment. And that was really game over. The Fulbright-Aiken Amendment basically cut off all funding for any further, after August 15th of 1972, there would be no more funding for any American combat operations anywhere in Southeast Asia. So if the communists continued to break the treaty as they already had and we hadn't done anything, but if they really pressed home, we would not respond as a fighting ally. And the communists, of course, were perceptive enough to understand that was a green light for them. And then on top of that, we cut the aid that we were giving them. On top of that, the price of oil, because of the Yom Kippur War and OPEC's rise in power, the value of our aid, the purchasing power of our aid, was denigrated significantly. And all that equipment we'd given them, became paperweights, if you will, because they could not afford to operate them, and the communists pressed ahead for victory, and it became a self-fulfilling outcome.
Well, what do you want people to take away from your book?
Ride the Thunder, again, is really a book about good men facing tough times and overcoming those tough times. If I could pick one group that I would like to read this book, it would be the warrior from Vietnam, American Marines, American soldiers, Vietnamese Marines, and Vietnamese soldiers. This book affirms their service, and I hope they'll come away feeling like what they did mattered in a positive way.
Well, okay, Richard Botkin, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much for allowing me on your show. God bless, Semper Fi, and again, thanks to all of our warriors who served faithfully.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
The mainstream midstream media is reporting that, quote, club-wielding Israeli police are evicting Palestinians from homes in Jerusalem. Of course, they're not giving any background in this story or any real facts at all. Joining us from Jerusalem is Aaron Klein, the report on what is really happening in Israel.
Thanks, Michael. I'm in Jerusalem right now at an area that happens to be not far from a certain house that is at the center of world attention, at the center of American condemnation, and actually at the center of lies being disseminated by the world media. Now, if you watch the BBC, if you watch CNN, if you read the New York Times, you're being told this story of club-wielding Israeli police who removed a few Arabs from a house in what they're calling occupied Arab East Jerusalem the other day. For example, the BBC reports, quote, Palestinians evicted from Jerusalem, and it tells about Israeli police wielding clubs who evicted 9 Palestinian families living in 2 houses in, quote, occupied East Jerusalem. The AFP, which we know millions of people read, talks of a scene of intimidating Israeli riot police removing peaceful Arabs from their apartments. Reuters, which is a major news organization, reported that, quote, club-wielding Israeli police evicted 2 Palestinian families from occupied Arab East Jerusalem. And a lot of these news reports, and by the way, I scanned about 80 articles, they're focusing on the Israelis who removed the Arabs from their home, focusing on the international condemnation that that move brought, but they're not really telling you exactly why these Arabs were kicked out from their homes. Except usually at the bottom of most of the articles that I read, there's one sentence buried in there that tells you that an Israeli court ruled that Arabs should be removed from the homes. But they don't really tell you exactly why the Israeli court ruled the Arabs should be removed from the homes, except for Reuters, which claims wrongly, by the way, that the Israeli court system is the Israeli court decision was based, quote, on 19th century documents. And anyway, this house happens to be in eastern sections of Jerusalem, in areas that the Palestinians claim for a capital, in areas that the Obama administration has demanded that Israel halt all settlement activity, which means Jewish construction.
Obviously, we're not going to hear the truth from the media. What is really happening?
The housing complex in question, the house that I'm talking about, is located in what's known as the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of eastern Jerusalem. Now, this house, according to documents, was originally Jewish, but the Jewish occupants were chased out during anti-Jewish Arab riots in 1929. Now, in 1929, when these Arab riots took place, scores of Jews were murdered, and thousands of Jews were expelled from Jerusalem, were expelled from other areas of the country, including, apparently, from this very house. And then what happened? There was an Arab family. The family is the Hijazi family. And they illegally squatted on this house in question. They illegally moved into the area, into the house, and they've been living there generation after generation for almost a century now. Still, even though documentation shows the house used to be Jewish and the Arabs have been squatting there illegally, Jewish groups quietly, they say they legally purchased the property from the Hijazi family for, by the way, a large amount of money. Now, just to make sure that the Hijazi family will not deny that that the purchase went through. The Jewish groups repurchased, they purchased the property on video. There's actual video of these Jewish organizations handing a large amount of cash to this family. There's video of this family signing documents over that the Jews own this property. Again, anyway, Israel's court system, which let me tell you, is not exactly a friend of the right wing here in Israel. They've ruled many times in favor of the Palestinians. Well, the Israeli court has twice now ruled that this property, this house in question, undoubtedly belongs to the Jews. And so the world now and the United States slammed Israel for simply enforcing property and zoning laws in its own capital.
But these stories describe the area as Arab-occupied East Jerusalem.
These terms, like occupied Arab East Jerusalem, completely fabricate the real situation in Jerusalem. Actually, according to the United Nations, according to international law, Eastern Jerusalem, which of course the Palestinians claim as a capital, even though they never ever had an entity there in the history of the universe, Eastern Jerusalem is not occupied according to international law. It's simply disputed. And saying that these areas are Arab East Jerusalem, actually, according to British documents, according to thorough British documentation, Jews used to outnumber Arabs in these areas as late as from the 1800s until the Jews were kicked out in 1929. And just a side note, by the way, this whole claim of calling this area East Jerusalem doesn't exist. There's never in the history of the city been something called East Jerusalem and West Jerusalem. Historically, there's one city, it's called Jerusalem. Then what happened was Jordan, right, when the Jews were about to found the state of Israel, Jordan illegally occupied the eastern sections of Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount. They desecrated synagogues there, they desecrated the Western Wall, they desecrated Jewish grave sites, and they occupied the area until Israel reunited Jerusalem in 1967.
What has the Obama administration said on this?
Now, the United States has absolutely weighed in here on Israel legally enforcing its own law and its own capital. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called the move, quote, deeply regrettable and provocative. She said, quote, I have said before that the evictions of families and demolitions of homes is not in keeping with Israeli obligations. I urge the government of Israel and municipal officials to refrain from such provocative actions, said Hillary Clinton. Provocative actions, that's right. I mean, can you imagine this taking place with regard to any other country? Let's say the United States, let's say the Washington, D.C. local municipality enforces its own local law and evicts somebody living illegally in somebody else's house, and then the world, and then Germany, Italy, Norway, the UN, the EU comes and condemns the United States, condemns the Washington municipality, and then dictates to Washington, D.C., Secretary of State Hillary Clinton slams Israel. Does sound a little bit racist. Anyway, I'm sure we'll continue to follow this story. For now, this is Aaron Klein with another exclusive update for The Savage Nation.
Thanks for getting the story out, Aaron.
Michael, thank you very much.
Thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here are some of the things I've been talking about on The Savage Nation today. The Obamaization of the United States of America. Have you had an Obama yet? Have you been Obamaized? Have you watched the sycophantic left-wing gooing over the confirmation of Sotomayor? It was astounding to listen to that throwback Schumer saying that she's not going to be another vote or another voice. She'll be a leader that will lead the Supreme Court back to the mainstream. This far leftist Sotomayor, this affirmative action appointee, is going to take the country back to the mainstream as if all the others on the court are Ku Klux Klan members.
She's not just going to be another vote. She's not just going to be another voice. She's going to be a real leader that will lead this court back to the mainstream, which is what this country needs.
Shame on you, Schumer. You're a disgrace to yourself, to your people, but most importantly, you're a big shame to the United States of America. But we knew this was going to happen, and it finally did. The affirmative action Sonia Sotomayor pushed forward all through her life because of her gender and her race is now on the Supreme Court. Did it have to happen? No. Could the Republicans have stopped it if they had the guts? Maybe. Does it matter in the long run? No, because as I've told you time and time again, Sotomayor is just replacing another liberal who's leaving. Of course, the fact that a self-proclaimed affirmative action baby is being placed on the highest court in the land is not encouraging. She also hates gun owners. But given who we've got in the White House and what else he's trying to do to undermine America, here's Leaky Leahy crowing over his victory of this affirmative action appointee.
This is the American dream. It's a dream that we all speak about when we campaign. What we've done now has made it real.
And now you got to listen to Upchuck Schumer, who just came out of the cloakroom where he sold some on the Brooklyn Bridge for nothing down.
As New Yorkers, we are so proud. As Americans, we're so proud. This is a great day, a great American story. And I am glad that she was voted on by more than 2-1, approved by more than 2-1. That will say something about the best of America. I want to salute our 9 Republican colleagues who had tremendous pressure on them. This was not a free will decision on their side of the aisle. There was all kinds of pressure to vote no, and 9 had the courage to do the right thing and vote yes, and that's important as well.
And finally, the Queen of Diamonds, Dianne Feinstein, who said it was a great day for the Supreme Court as she gave up some business deals for the family business.
Now, finally, here we are, and we have a new Supreme Court justice. And I think it's truly a great day for the United States Supreme Court. I think it's a great day for the law. I think it's a great day for justice. I think it's a great day for every young woman out there that says, yes, I can do it if I work hard.
Yep, if you work hard or if you happen to be the right race or sex, yep. We also talked about war dogs of the Pacific. I saw an amazing documentary last night called War Dogs of the Pacific. It was about the U.S. Marines in the Pacific fighting hand-to-hand combat with the Japanese during World War II and how they used these amazing dogs to sniff out the enemy. It was incredible to watch these rock-hard men who saved us from fascism talk about how they felt about their dogs, how when their dogs were injured, they went to pieces. It was one of the most touching things I've ever seen in the history of documentary film. We have a trailer for that. Let me hear it now to give me something to think about.
I never picked him out. He picked me out.
They trained for 8 hours a day. That's the only person the dog knew.
Their smell and hearing is so acute.
I couldn't imagine going into a jungle without a dog.
I'd know they were close before they ever got there.
But oh, my God, they're shooting their bullets.
They saved hundreds of lives, including mine.
There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think of that dog.
Here's James Hurston with a report on the shenanigans going on in Hollywood.
Thanks, Michael. Chicago-style pressure politics are being used on Hollywood television executives. The White House strong-armed ABC, NBC, and CBS to place President Obama's health scare press conference on primetime TV. This was reported by the Washington Post. Now, primetime presidential press conferences used to be rare. George W. Bush held the 4 of them in 8 years. Obama has had 4 in 6 months. And Obama's staging, planting of reporters, and long-winded prepared statements has left very little in the way of news value coming out of these numerous press events. And the network heads aren't happy. ABC, NBC, and CBS have lost as much as $40 million in advertising in order to carry Obama's staged events. By the way, the Fox broadcast TV network has declined to carry the last 2 Obama sessions. When TV execs started to resist giving up valuable prime time for the socialized medicine show, Rahm Emanuel was brought in to make offers, well, the kind of offers the network couldn't refuse. According to Emanuel's spokesperson, Sarah Feinberg, press prevaricator Robert Gibbs found out TV executives were complaining about preempting primetime shows, so Gibbs went to the White House enforcer, Rambo. According to Feinberg, Rahm made a round of calls to network executives to discuss ways the White House could, as she said, accommodate concerns. Well, Rahm didn't bother with the heads of the respective networks, though. He went to the parent company chiefs. Instead of calling the head of ABC, Rahm phoned Bob Iger, chief executive of parent company Disney. Instead of contacting the guy who runs NBC, Emanuel went to Jeffrey Immelt, chief executive of parent company General Electric. He also spoke with Les Moonves, the chief executive of CBS, but that's because that company had already been spun off from Viacom, or he would have called the parent company head there as well. Now, Immelt has been solidly behind the Obama agenda. He's a member of the administration's Economic Recovery Advisory Board. Now, Emanuel was referred by Immelt to NBC CEO Jeff Zucker, who undoubtedly was made aware his boss had been contacted. So Rambo made the deal. Emanuel may have consulted his super agent Hollywood brother, Ari, because he used an old Hollywood agent trick, saving the big call to Disney chief Iger until after he had obtained a deal from NBC and CBS. So TV execs are doing this reluctantly, losing money during a recession.
Are you kidding? Why?
Because political pressure works. Senior VP of CBS, Paul Friedman, admitted that the execs feel the pressure and that even the news divisions have mixed feelings about whether they are being used. And NBC Washington Bureau Chief Mark Whitaker said Obama's at risk of overexposure. He thinks there are other ways to have a dialogue other than taking up an hour of prime time. But Chicago-style bullying apparently gets results in Hollywood. Via his heavy-handed tactics, Emanuel was able to get an hour of primetime television for the fourth time in 6 months. And unlike the Bush administration that had let execs know in advance that news conference dates would be coming, Obama staffers waited until the last moment to notify the networks of their plans. Yes, the Windy City White House gang dictated the timing to the networks each time they've staged an Obama press conference. Question is, will the networks continue to cave to the demand for valuable prime time when news conferences are available on the cable news channels? Well, Rahm and company had better not call the Savage Nation to preempt any programming. Even Chicago thuggery couldn't pull that one off. Thanks, Michael, for all you do. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks, James. It doesn't seem that the Hollywood mentality is getting any better under Obama. Not that I expected it to. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. You got to start at the bottom this time and read your way up. From the New York Post, self-hating Jews mock their own religion in a play. The cast includes a hip-hop-loving bar mitzvah boy who greets his guests with a hearty "what's up" and a very pregnant lesbian rabbi from Brooklyn. Unbelievable what self-hating Jews will do to mock themselves for a buck. Next story is Chavez, Venezuela to buy Russian arms and tanks. We're all socialists now, eh? When do they close down the radio stations and take over the newspapers? But actually, they don't have to take over the newspapers. They've already done so. And of course, in a ho-hum moment, Senate confirms Sotomayor to the Supreme Court, acting as though she's going to change the entire world simply because she's a woman who got where she is through affirmative action. I kind of doubt it. The man who sprayed bullets into a fitness class filled with women he didn't know, killing three and then himself, kept a webpage on which he wrote, "Women just don't like me." Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Repressed rage. Madoff victims being ripped off by lawyers. Henry Gates, who's he? Why, he's the distinguished professor at Harvard. What has Henry Gates got that Michael Savage doesn't? I'll let you read the article by Ellis Washington. Remember the freezer cash former lawmaker, Rep. William Jefferson from New Orleans, who was accused of taking bribes? He's the guy who had $90,000 in his freezer. The FBI found it in his freezer. He claimed he was innocent. He said that the money got there by spontaneous combustion. Well, he was convicted of taking bribes. Shocking. Out of San Francisco, police said they averted a potential workplace shooting by arresting Guadalupe Cabrera Miranda. The question is, did they read him his Miranda rights? I don't know. You'll have to read the article. The White House announced the war on terrorism is over. It says that we're no longer fighting jihadists. According to Obama, jihad is not a holy war. It's cleansing oneself. That's interesting. Had I only known. Remember those tiger attack men who picked on tigers, threw bottles at them, allegedly? The tiger attacked. They won $900,000 from the city of San Francisco from a scum-sucking, verminous lawyer. Well, these tiger attack darlings were arrested again. Over and over again. Isn't the law grand? Go to the top of michaelsavage.com and you will see who coined the phrase obotomy and obotomized. Me, today. We're going to use these phrases such as, "Mister, you sound like you've had an obotomy." Or, "Mister, it sounds as though you've been obotomized." Coined by Michael Savage to be stolen instantly by the hemorrhoid with ears. From nuclear free zones to nuclear family free zones. That's right. I was taking a walk the other day when I thought about the years that I lived in a small town in liberal Marin County called Unfairfax. Like many insular leftist towns of the San Francisco Bay Area, Unfairfax had signs as you entered the city limits declaring that it was a nuclear-free zone. Berkeley has lots of them. This is the sort of meaningless Marxist drivel that far-left town councils passed back in the 1980s to make a statement against nuclear war. As if there were a sane person anywhere who wanted the world to be destroyed by nuclear war. Anyway, these smirking, moronic, self-satisfied leftist sycophants would try to get themselves in good with the ruling leftist elite of California by declaring their little tiny hamlets to be nuclear-free. Now, of course, no one ever considered building a nuclear power plant or a nuclear missile site anywhere near these throwback towns. Nobody ever thought of driving a truck with any sort of nuclear material through these out-of-the-way boondock hamlets. And even if they did, there would be no way of stopping it. But the idea of passing such a mindless ordinance appealed to the puerile brains of these pot-smoking, drug-taking, child-molesting neo-Marxists. They not only hated nuclear weapons and nuclear power, they also hated the nuclear family. I lived in such towns with my children, and there was an unbelievable air of condescension towards anyone who was married and stayed together and had children. It offended them in so many ways. Why, it was nothing more than a manifestation of patriarchy. It offended those who chose alternative lifestyles, if you know what I mean. And having a child has a negative impact on the environment. They had no conception that a nuclear family would hold the nation together. It's mothers and fathers and sons and daughters living and learning and working together with the stress that produces a sane moral society, you create a sane moral society. Without the nuclear family, there is chaos, just as there would be chaos and anarchy if the leftists were able to declare the entire United States a nuclear-free zone. The nuclear family is the last hope for American society, and if the left is able to destroy it with an attitude of, if it feels good, do it, then we are all obotomized. WOR is the next caller. Paul, you're up. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Okay, real quick, I got a lot to say and no time to say it, so I had to get out of it for the very same reason. You work next to a guy, he learns how to make a sandwich, he comes from another country somewhere, and you're trying to show him how to work and get better and everything like that. Not only they're not really good yet, but they start learning from you, and then as soon as they can make a sandwich or something, they try to take you over right away.
Yeah. Then they resent that you even own the store. They say you stole it from them. They were infected already with America hatred. That they're working for you. You gave him a start already. He should own your store.
It brings together everything you've been talking about, this liberalism and all this forgiveness and all this liberal way of life. Is that, you know, these liberals run around wiping their noses for everybody.
Most of these liberals don't really work, Paul. They have government jobs. They work in these NGOs. And what they do is brainwash the illegal immigrant into thinking they're being ripped off. They're here as guests of the country illegally. And the fact of the matter is that's what they should be reminded of. Let me explain something to you. There used to be a thing called apprenticeship. There was a whole series of craftsmanship in this country and in Europe. The guilds protected it very carefully. The guilds have unfortunately just become unions, and there's no apprenticeship anymore to speak of. And I don't want to go into great details. I have a friend whose grandfather was a carpenter, came over from Greece. In order to get a carpenter's license in San Francisco at the turn of the century, you had to pass a certain number of tests, one of which was the ability to build a frame, cut a door out of raw wood, put the hinges on the door you cut out of raw wood, and prove to the man who was checking up on you that that door would swing freely in the frame that you built. Only then would you be moved up on the rankings of a craftsmanship scale. Now, compare that today to the raw workers who are working construction sites who can hardly drive a nail straight. But that's the problem today. The workmanship is poor all around. I'll give you another example. Great brands like Sony and Nikon are no longer foolproof. I have a large Sony monitor in several studios that I work in. These are like, I don't know, 18, 20-inch screens. They're beautiful big screens. You say, oh, I look at Sony. It's like, whoa, that's like a Rolls Royce. Three of these screens have failed within a year. I had to send them back to the factory. That's a Sony now coming out of Japan. I'll give you another example. 2 or 3 years ago, I bought a Nikon D70 camera. Now, today I use a smaller one, a high quality, I don't know how, megabyte. It's a great little camera. The Nikon D70 cost $1,200 when I bought it. Today I had to bring it in because a flashing light's been on now for a month. I haven't even used it for a year. I wanted to take the big camera with me with a telephoto lens, which I own. They told me it's a warranty item. With Nikon, they get 3 a week now of this D70 failing on them. And it has to be sent. It'll take 6 weeks, and then you're $200. This is what's going on now with once reliable brands like Sony and Nikon. So it's not just limited to workers who don't know how to wash a boat who want to suddenly own your boat, or a pizza guy who learns how to make a sandwich and thinks he should own the Quiznos chain. It goes all the way down to the factories. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.